Welcome to the Angry Admins Podcast for February 6, 2007, episode 14. It's Vista.
Vista.
Windows Vista.
No, it's Vista.
But it's like, hasta la vista, baby.
No, you're not Arnold. It's like you're looking at a grand vista. You're seeing this big expanse, this new interface. It's a vista.
I don't know, man. This is Texas. It's a Windows Vista.
Vista is totally fire. It's Vista.
Whatever, man. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Angry Admins Podcast. My name's Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
So, I'll tell you what, Joe, let's get started with some news stuff.
Okay, so, start off with the first thing on the radar is Walmart is joining the movie download business. This, to me, is big news. One, because anytime Walmart does anything, it shows that this is where things are heading. This is the, you know, it's hit mainstream if Walmart's doing it.
Right.
And, you know, I think they're afraid that They're the biggest reseller for DVD sales, and they're trying to keep up with that. They know that things are moving away from storefront sales, and everybody wants download, and they came out big. You can already use it if you go to their site. They've got a link to it. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's still in beta, which seems like everybody's in beta these days. I'm so sick of beta products coming out, but either way, they signed with six major Hollywood studios right off the gate, which is better than Apple could do, which is pretty amazing. A couple of bad things about it. It is Windows Media only, so it looks like no Macs are going to be able to use this service. But the prices seemed pretty reasonable, basically similar to iTunes offerings, you know, where new releases are standard DVD price and anything old has a little bit of a discount to it. So looks very well done, very clean interface. I actually am very, very impressed with they were able to keep this under wraps and come out big with a nice looking product that looks like it's going to be successful. We'll have to wait and see how people, if they have any troubles with the downloads or if it's a slow connection. I haven't bought anything off it as well. I don't really buy movies online yet, so. That's pretty much it for the Walmart story. Ryan, what do you got for us?
So late last week I was looking at some stuff and the story about Michael Dell returning to Dell Computers caught my eye. So that happened like right after last week's podcast. So it's a few days old, but still relevant. So this reminds me of the Gateway thing that we had a few years back where Tim Waite, whatever the guy's name was that founded Gateway, whenever Gateway was in dire straits, they wound up calling their founder back in and saying, oh, we're in trouble. We don't know what to do. Let's call back in the guy that started the whole thing, and maybe he can, you know, resurrect, you know, the whole the spirit and bring our business back. Well, ever since 2004, when Michael Dell bailed on his stuff, then they've kind of had some downturns and had a lot of trouble. So now they've announced that he'll be coming back as CEO. The thing is, Dell just isn't. They're not on top anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time when, you know, everything was Dell.
Right.
But the three big challenges I see that they face right now are, of course, they don't enjoy the cheap Intel processors anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a while, Intel was cutting them a deal.
Right.
And so they were coming out with awesome machines, you know, that were coming in under the normal price point because they were getting kickbacks from Intel. Also, they're still recovering from the whole exploding Sony batteries thing.
Right.
So
yeah, I definitely could see that.
That really hurt them because it... You know, in spite of the fact that they weren't the ones manufacturing the batteries, you know, all the manufacturers that were using Sony batteries that were blowing up took a hit, you know, with the Macs, the Dells, all of them. And the other thing is the challenge is they're not number one right now, so they don't have that momentum. So they're kind of following up in HP's shadow. So we'll have to see what happens. I mentioned Gateway. You know, their founder basically kind of went out to pasture and took some time off, and they brought in a new guy who totally changed their whole family culture and turned it into like just another corporation, moved their headquarters to California, and everything was about company policy and rules and restrictions, and They had all the Gateway country stores. Remember those?
Yeah, that's right.
And then Gateway started branching out into, oh, we also sell TVs and we do this and we do that. And then they started offering services and training, and they just went everywhere. And they were making money for a while until the dot-com bust.
Yeah.
And then when everything started to implode, ever since then, they have not been able to figure out where they want to go. So when they bought out eMachines, you remember those guys?
Oh, yeah.
Then the eMachines CEO at that time, basically, he was the one picked to continue running Gateway once that merger happened. But as of, I think, last September, I think that guy's name is Inouye, something like that. But even he's hung it up, and they're bringing someone else in now. So Gateway is kind of the company that just can't decide what it wants to be. You know, they were aiming for like the low-end home consumer market for computers because they didn't feel like they could compete on an international market anymore. They didn't have the business market sector, so they were just making like cheap PCs. So now they're trying to make a comeback, and if you go to their website, it looks exactly like the Dell front page of the website.
I mean, you were showing me that today. That cracked me up.
So the Dell homepage and the Gateway front page looks so similar. It's crazy. But they have their own lines of servers now, and I don't see them, like, there are no Gateway country stores, I don't think, anymore, and they don't, they're not in the TV business now and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So they're trying to refocus, and I think maybe we might see Dell doing some of these same things, like trying to refocus on business, trying to re-overtake HP, and try to get back to where they were. But, you know, I don't know if just plugging in Michael Dell back into the equation is going to fix anything, because you know the market always evolves and the situation is a little different than it was.
So yeah, definitely.
We'll see.
Yeah, I think just a little bit to add, they part of the reason I think too they lost their way is they really had the server market locked in on the Windows side, and then AMD came out with their amazing new processor and everybody was going to it, and Dell didn't have AMD.
Right.
So they kind of got burned there, and everybody was going to HP or whoever else they wanted to go to, and they finally got caught back up getting AMD, but then they lost their good Intel deals when they did that. So it's like they got hit from both sides all at once.
Exactly. So what else do we have on the news front?
So the next story we've got is kind of just a funny story. Ryan and I both try to keep our home PCs really quiet, so we're always looking for some new CPU coolers. And Cooler Master is one of the big names out there. And they released a new product that arrives in March, and this thing is just...
It's so huge.
You have to go look at a picture of it, because it basically overshadows half of your motherboard. I mean, it starts out from the CPU, the little CPU, and just explodes into this massive... It can house two 120-millimeter CPU fans on the top of it. So if you can imagine that over the top of your motherboard, it's just like dwarfs the entire...
It's like,
if you look at it in a case, it just...
It looks like a metal mushroom cloud over your CPU.
Yeah. I mean, so on the one hand, I'm sure that the fans almost rarely ever have to even turn on with a heatsink that gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it makes me nervous having something that big hanging off of my CPU. I mean, it's got to weigh quite a bit, and that's going to be putting pressure on the CPU. I don't know, that housing is going to have to be designed just right for it to hold up over time.
So like my CPU, my case has a handle on top.
Right.
So imagine me like setting it down a few times with that much weight pulling sideways on the CPU.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I just
And who doesn't slide their computer out and take it apart and, you know, take the sides off and you're like banging it around a little bit. I mean, you want to be careful, but you don't want to have to treat it like an egg.
Right.
It's a computer.
Mm. I don't know. To me, this... I'm assuming it probably cools really good, but I don't know how good of an idea it is.
But either way, go check it out. Look at the pictures. It's just pretty funny.
Yeah, we'll have links in the show notes.
So this week I had a chance to take Vista home and actually install it on a normal PC instead of through Parallels like last week. And I wanted to come back and give you some of my impressions of Windows Vista. First of all, the install was actually very, very impressive. It was really easy to install it, which I'd kind of seen in Parallels, but you know, it was slow going through all the virtualization. But on my PC, I did a clean install, and there's basically almost nothing that you have to watch for. You know, on XP, when you do an install, you have to watch for the network setup screen, and then it loads some more things.
Right.
This is like they really thought about it, and they do basically up until the very end, you do nothing except it's doing its standard install screen.
Nice.
And then at the end, you enter all your information, and then you're in Vista already.
Mm.
So it's nice because you can just let it sit, go off and do something else, come back, and then take care of everything, and you're ready to get started.
What was the total time, would you say?
Do you have I would estimate about 25 minutes. You know, not too bad. I mean, it's a big install,
mm-hmm.
and I was doing it from a DVD. I know you can buy it on individual CDs, and I would guess at that point you'd have to be swapping in CDs and that kind of thing.
But, mm-hmm.
So I'd recommend the DVD install for sure. But the formatting of the drive and everything was just very, very simple. And I appreciated that. I know you can simplify the XP install with some script files and things. I've never really done it myself, but
mm-hmm.
you can do things like that on XP, but this is just the best way to do it. So once I got it installed, you know, I'm fiddling around. I really actually got used to the new interface and where everything was very quickly. You know, I've got lots of years of experience on Windows. I've been using it from back in the very first, you know, Windows 3.1 install I used. So I'm very used to Windows, and there isn't enough in this that changes that I felt like I was on a brand new
mm-hmm.
OS. I really like the new interface touches with, you know, when you minimize a window, it kind of shrinks down into the taskbar, you know, very similar to OS X,
right.
The Genie look. A lot of the interface stuff reminded me of OS X, but it's just a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. It did feel a little bit original. I was a little worried it would feel like a direct copy. You know, all the networking, everything was just easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they really put a lot of thought into each little detail. For example, my printer. I have an HP DeskJet 6980. This is a printer from HP that has wireless and standard wired networking built in.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just directly connect it to your router or via wired or wireless. I've connected via wireless. I had always had trouble with it on XP getting it set up. Once it's set up, it was fantastic, but getting it set up was always kind of a pain. So I opened my Add Printer Wizard on Vista. Click Add Printer. All of a sudden, I see it starting to search. 3 seconds later, HP 6980. Install. Searching for drivers. Drivers installed. Print test page. Done. Wow. It was amazing.
That's pretty nice.
I couldn't believe it. And this is a fairly new printer. I mean, I just got it within the past year. And, you know, they had the drivers on there already. I'm assuming it was possible it went out and grabbed it off the network, but I'm very, very certain that it was already there.
Hmm.
Printed great. Never had a problem with it.
That's nice.
So that, you know, printers, man, it was fantastic. Now my scanner isn't working. Haven't been able to get it to work. It's kind of a generic brand, but I think that's part of the problem. But I was really hoping that would be easy as well. And right. No luck there.
Yeah. What about the actual network install? Like, did it just assume DHCP?
It did just assume DHCP, which is what I have. I ended up switching to, I do a static IP on my desktop just because it makes it easier for firewalling and getting things like Warcraft working and torrents and that kind of thing. But it picked up the DHCP just fine. Networking was a breeze. It looks a little bit different, but I was able to easily get through it. And so, you know, overall, in general, I would say it's very, very well done. I've been very happy. But I do have several disappointments. For one, I have a Windows Mobile 3 smartphone. So this is a small phone with just a number keypad, no touchscreen or anything, kind of a basic smartphone.
Right.
And there's no smartphone syncing built in.
Mm.
So this is a Windows mobile device trying to sync to the brand new Windows operating system.
And
I plug it in and it does nothing.
There's no path there.
Yeah. Nothing. So I did a search for ActiveSync, which is the old app that Windows used. And they have a new app called Windows Mobile Hot Sync, Windows Mobile Sync, I don't remember what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's in beta.
It's
the only app you can use on Vista.
Yeah.
So I download the beta, and it hooks up Sync, you know, you have to set up kind of your, you have to pair it with a device, and right. This is all just via USB.
Mm.
You pair it, it sets up, connects, syncing. Oh, okay, so it's working. I check my Outlook install. There's nothing in there. Didn't work. So I finally, you know, I fiddled around with it, found the settings, made some changes, got it working. But it was easier to sync my smartphone in XP.
Yeah. Now, are you convinced? Okay, so you said you were trying to sync it with Outlook?
Yes.
So this Outlook 07?
No, this is the old version of Outlook, 2003.
Okay, so I was going to ask if you're sure that it's Vista and not the, if you went to Outlook 07.
Yeah, this is the exact same setup I had in XP.
Okay.
So all I'm doing is using the same version of, same phone, same office. Uh-huh. The only thing that's different is Vista.
Do you have 07?
Office no, 07? I don't.
I'm wondering if you had it, would it have worked?
See, but that's frustrating that they would, I mean, honestly, they may, but I'm not sure that, I think it was more of the syncing app that had the problem because I was able to fix it by changing the preferences in there.
Yeah, you're probably right. I just wanted to clarify that.
So. Yes. Yeah. So, So that was pretty disappointing. See, what else did I have trouble with? A lot of people are having trouble with iTunes and having it not play their apps. So that was that wasn't a disappointment on Microsoft's side, but that was disappointment on from Apple, who you know, the beta's been out forever.
Right.
Why did they not get this working yet? They have released a fix. We'll have a link in the show notes for that. But it's like, man, what are you guys doing? This has been, iTunes is so big on Windows. Why would they not make sure that it worked out of the box immediately? So
I have a couple of things on that. Either A, they wanted to embarrass Vista and like, oh, look, Vista's crappy. It breaks your iTunes, you know?
Yeah, it's possible. They made some change right when it released. But even then, they've had the gold version out to like HP and Dell since like December.
Right. And that was my other thing was that, okay, did Vista make some last minute change that Apple wasn't aware of? And, you know, what are the odds of that?
So, I guess it could have been done in updates as well because I didn't install iTunes before I patched. So it could be everybody else is doing that as well. Although mine worked fine. So
I was going to ask you, how much patching did you do when you first came online?
Well, a lot of my patching was Office because I installed Office before I did any patching. Okay. And it syncs that all together. There were only three or four, I think, Windows patches. It wasn't bad. And some of those were drivers, too. So it actually wasn't much. And that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. The built-in updater built right into Control Panel instead of having to use IE.
That's really good.
Finally. Right. And it even can integrate with your Office updater. So, like, if you go to Windows Update and you can do, instead of doing Windows Update, they call it Microsoft Update, I think, where you, like, sync your Office and Windows Updates together in one thing. You can do that with this built-in updater as well.
So. Nice.
A couple other problems I had. The desktop, seems like they have some refresh problems with it. I'll delete files or I'll unzip a program and nothing shows up on the desktop. I refresh and they're there.
See, that's bad.
So I don't know what's there. It's like there's a bug in the code there.
Mm.
I don't know if anybody else has been having trouble with that. I haven't heard of anybody else having that issue.
Weird.
But that's continuing still. And it's really frustrating because you unzip something and you're like, where is it? Because zip, you know, unzip is built in.
Mm-hmm.
Along with, this was a nice surprise, WinRAR is built into Vista.
Really?
Which, you know, that's used by a lot of people who are downloading, you know, unofficial products.
Right.
So that was nice because Zip was built into XP. It kind of didn't work very well, but a lot of people didn't like it. And the new interface to it all is actually quite nice.
You think it could possibly be a Firefox thing? Like were the downloads through Firefox?
Well, the download was through Firefox, but the download showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But the unzip,
okay,
which is built in, didn't show up.
Okay.
Or like... If I highlight a file and I hit delete, it disappears. But if I highlight multiple files and hit delete, they don't.
See, I was trying to mentally, in all these cases, I'm trying to mentally build the case as the devil's advocate for Microsoft.
Sure, and that's fair.
Oh, well, if you only had Office 07 and, you were using Firefox instead of the new IE7.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If you use all of our stuff, then it all works perfectly. But, I mean, it sounds like in each case you're telling me that's not the reason that it's not
right.
Perfect.
No.
So,
So, my overall impressions, should you buy it, yes or no? I would have to say, probably in the first hour I used it, I would have told everybody yes. But after using it for a while, I would say don't buy it. Don't buy it yet unless you don't have another option. And here's a few reasons why. I've talked about some of the negativities, but a couple things. The security features that they built in to try to make it so that people wouldn't install stupid things is so annoying. Every 5 seconds, something's popping up. Bloop. Did you really want to install this app? Yes. That's why I double-clicked on it.
Right.
Bloop. Did this application install correctly? Yes, it installed correctly. Why are you even asking me that? It's already done.
Right.
And there's apps that don't work because of this app and because of this universal control, they call it. I forget what the actual name is. It's like UAC.
Big Brother.
Yeah. I ended up turning it off. Yeah. It's off completely on my install.
Well, you mentioned that you were trying to install something and this thing popped up behind the window.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Is you're installing something and it pops up one box and you click yes. And when it pops up, not only does it pop it up, but it pops it up. My screen flashes black, goes back to Vista. The box is highlighted and everything else is grayed out. It's like, look at this box and click yes or no.
We're the most important thing.
Yeah. So that's what happens normally. But then sometimes the app will be halfway through the install and another pop will come, but it doesn't come up in front of the install, and I just see in my taskbar this flashing thing, and I'm like, and my app has been sitting there for, you know, a couple minutes at the same percentage, and I can't figure out why it's not installing, and then I look down there and I click, and it says, is this what you wanted to do, yes or no? Oh my, oh, it's so frustrating. And there's apps that if once I turned it off, I could install, where before I couldn't even get them to install.
Wow.
So they've totally screwed up with this whole security. You know, that it's supposedly so much more secure. Well, yeah, it's because you can't do anything in it. I mean, it's one thing to make it secure, but I'm not using any apps that are old either. I'm not trying to use stuff that was designed for Windows 95. This is all stuff that's been updated for this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it definitely broke all my antivirus stuff. I haven't even been able to get a current antivirus because you have to have the newest Symantec corporate, and I'm definitely not going to buy the Norton.
Oh, heck no.
Security hose my machine install.
Right.
It also broke a couple work items. And the VPN software that we use at work would not install in Vista. Mm-hmm. It flashes up saying that there is there's a problem with this, and it adds it to this queue of, we know this is a problem, and we'll let you know when there's a fix.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one reason not to get it, is the stupid control thing. Right. The other reason is we talked about last week the family discount keys. And if you don't remember what this is, you buy Vista Ultimate and you pay this extra fee and you get some Vista Home Premium keys for a very discounted price.
Right.
So all these people are like, oh, that's great. So they go out and buy it. And most of the people that buy this, the keys they get are invalid. They go through the whole install process. They type in their key. That's invalid.
So wait, they buy Ultimate, and then they get the two cheap Home Premium keys for like their kids' computers or whatever. Right. And then they wipe out their XP install and upgrade it to this thing, and then those keys don't work?
Yes, and here's what Microsoft says. There is no expected time period for a fix at this time, and they take your information and say they will contact you. Wow.
Okay, do you remember what I said last week about if you buy the upgrade? And I'm assuming, I don't know if these are the Home Premiums, are they upgrades or are they full installs?
I think these are upgrades. Okay. I think it depends on what you get.
But. So if you buy an upgrade to anything, then it blows away your XP activation key forever.
Right.
Which means now, if it got far enough into the install to do that, then you can't even reinstall your XP, which means now you have a dead box with an inoperative Vista.
Yeah.
And your kid's like crying in his room.
Well, and how hard is it for them to just issue a new key? I mean, you know they have an algorithm that all they have to do is say, bloop, 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 and here's the new key for you. I don't get it.
Wow.
So, you know, and I was reading an article this week that kind of summed it up pretty well. Microsoft has kind of lost their focus, and they're not focusing on the customer anymore. They're focusing on their business partners. They're focusing on how can we make the record association happy with us so we can get back in the iPod market.
But here's the thing. They don't have to make customers happy.
I know.
What choice do you have?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, okay, Linux, Mac, whatever. But, I mean, in reality, with as much market share as they have, it's just like high gas prices. Yeah. What are you going to do, not drive?
Well, all it takes is for Windows to be good enough. That's all it needs to be.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they copied everything from OS X, which they did, by the way. The photo sharing app, the new version of Windows Movie Maker, they both look identical to the stuff on OS X, which whether you like those or not, that's exactly what they did. They copied it.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because all they have to do is be good enough. They already have the market share, and people won't change to OS X or Linux because they can't run the apps they want.
It's like you're driving home from work. You want to eat dinner, so you eat McDonald's, even though it tastes like crap.
Yeah, because it's good enough.
Because whatever. At least I'm not hungry.
Yeah, you're full. That's the...
Man.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to mention is the Vista, the EULA, the End User License Agreement. Apparently, if you are using... Now, I think this is only for Windows Home Premium or less. So if you have business like I do or Ultimate, you're okay. But anything that is not Windows Vista Business or Ultimate, you can't even run it in Parallels. So they don't allow virtualization. It's forbidden in the EULA. And their point is, well, you know, why would anybody want it unless they're in business or they want to buy the Ultimate? But here's the stupid thing. If you're running in virtualization, you're not going to want all the Wowie Zowie, 3D, all that. You're going to want Windows Basic.
Right.
So that... It's frustrating to me because then you can't just go get the cheap Home. You have to pay the extra money
right.
when you're not even using it as your major OS. It's like, hey, we're going to stick it to you, Parallels and OS X. We're not going to let you run it.
So once upon a time in history, I almost read a user license agreement, but then I wised up and I stopped myself. So here's the thing. Does it break it or is it just against the EULA?
Well, I don't think it breaks it. I think you could install it.
But you're in violation of the license.
But if they discover that you're in violation, they have this simplified mode that they put you into where all you can do, you get a black background, you get a icon for IE. All you can do is open that IE icon and buy a new key. Buy a new version of Vista, and then that's all you can do. So if they discover that you're running in parallel in virtualization, which... I guess you could easily get away with not doing, but it's why would they even put that in there then?
But would they do that? So that's like a $250 fine for...
Well, you're licensing it from them. You don't own it anymore. So they could easily do that. Would they? Probably not. I mean, I know I'm kind of taking it to the edge here.
No, but I mean, this is the direction all this crap's coming.
We didn't think they would ever keep people from using a copy of Windows if it was pirated. They've been letting them up until now. And right. now with the new version, they're like, nope, we're not going to let you use it anymore.
Right. And my argument with that is, which is better, to keep people from patching, which is our situation
exactly.
with XP Service Pack 2, which means we have millions of non-genuine infected PCs which cannot download a patch, which are affecting other licensed official users, or is it better just to go ahead and say, we think you're running an illegal copy, we're just going to turn you completely off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I've been on both sides of it, and I hate cleaning up infected networks.
Yeah.
But I also really hate paying a whole bunch of money for an operating system all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, I can respect the fact that they spent lots of money developing this, and people should pay for it. But if they make it hard for people who don't pay for it to use, they're just going to go somewhere else. And that's been shown in the past. I mean, there's been 3D software, 3D development software that has been, you know, number one for years, and then they lock it down so tight that it's hard to steal, mm-hmm. and they go out of business.
Yeah. It's almost like if iTunes was completely open source, like if iTunes worked on... If you downloaded one iTunes package and it worked on Mac, mm-hmm. Linux, Windows, you know, if it worked everywhere, if games were that way,
right,
where games could be run on any platform,
mm-hmm.
then I think Windows would be let go.
I think so too.
You know, so I don't, man. Interesting.
But I think we summed it up before where it's just good enough. People are going to stick with it through all the trouble and everything. It doesn't matter.
It's the McDonald's of operating systems. It's the Taco Bell. It tastes horrible.
Yeah.
But here's the bad thing. It's not cheap like McDonald's, though.
It's in a shiny new package, but it's still the same old crap.
Yeah. So you pay a fortune, and it's just mediocre.
Yeah.
But it's the latest mediocrity you can own.
That's right.
Well, there you go.
Have you ever tried to rip your commercial DVDs to a format that you can play on any device?
No, never. I would never do something like that. Actually, well, okay.
Well, if you ever tried to do it on Windows, you know that there's not a single good app out there. You either get something that works okay and it looks ugly, or you download something and you just installed 30 copies of a Trojan backdoor virus on your machine.
Right.
Well, if you have Linux or OS X, you are about to download the greatest app ever.
Wow.
It is called Handbrake. Open source, GPL licensed DVD ripping software.
Nice.
And it does what it does very, very, very well. This app started out on BOS and was ported over to OS X and Linux. Apparently a Windows port is being worked on, so there may be some hope for you out there yet.
Mm.
But well, all this does is you stick in your DVD, you open the software, and you tell it if you want to rip it to an H.264 file or an MPEG-4 file. You can change your audio, either keep it as AC3, MP3, or even the open source OGG format that so many people seem to love.
Boo.
But nobody uses.
Bad OGG.
It's just a great little app. You know, go ahead and go download it, check it out while I'm talking. You can change your picture size. You can you can make it grayscale. You can do two-pass encoding, set your quality, all the stuff you want. But it's all there in just a nice, clean, you know, what you expect from an OS X app. My favorite feature is you can even set your target size. So say you have a 1 gig thumb drive. Set your target size to 1 gig, and you've got a file that fits exactly on your thumb drive.
Nice.
You want to put it on a CD? Set it for 650 megabytes, 700 megabytes, depending on the CD you have. I tried this. I set my file size to 700 megabytes. I set it to a H.264 MP3 rip, kept the original resolution, ripped it. It took a while. I did the two-pass encoding. Probably took two and a half hours. By the time it was done, it looked like I was playing the DVD. It was beautiful.
That's nice.
No artifacting. This was a kind of a slow movie, so it didn't have a lot of action sequences, but it was exactly the size I wanted, and it looked beautiful.
Now, it just renders a video, or does it render like an image of the disc?
It renders a video, so you can take it and play it.
Okay, so it doesn't
so
like
it doesn't do like an ISO or some...
Okay.
You can't take it and then take that and copy it to a DVD easily. It'll have to be re-encoded.
Okay, because I was going to ask you about the menus on the DVDs and all that.
Yeah, you lose all your menus. Basically, you can tell it what chapters you want. You can do all the chapters all at once. You could set up a queue and do it a chapter at a time. So, and then if you say you have an iPod or a PSP that you want it to be easily ripped to, they have a little, almost like a script that's based on Handbrake called Instant Handbrake. You open it up, you tell it your chapters, you set it to iPod format, click, done.
That's nice. When you were showing me this, the coolest thing that you know really wowed me was the when you set the resolution.
Yeah.
Because it shows you like a frame of the movie, and you can like arrow up and down and actually see how big it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really nice. You can see, well, that's going to be small enough. Like I could watch it at that resolution and it would still be fine.
It's nice. Yeah. And you change it on the fly. You can change your aspect ratio. So if you wanted to squish it, you could. You can crop. So if you had to fit like a widescreen video and you wanted it to maximize your iPod screen, you could, you know, squish it a little, crop it a little, and get it to look good.
Yeah. And you said the Instant Handbrake has the pre-made, the iPod format.
Right, yeah, you just check. I mean, it's this simple, like, four options, and you click, and it's going to render it exactly for your iPod or your PSP.
So if I had some DVDs and, like, a 40-gigabyte video iPod, then I could take these guys down to just tell it iPod format, max 1 gig space, and put 40 movies on there.
Yeah, and it's free.
See, that would be dangerously sweet.
It's very nice. So go check it out. It's... You know, I always thought it was a pain to rip a DVD, but you know, this is great for if you just have home movies you want that you've got on DVD you need to capture, or if you have commercial DVD that you want to use however you want because you paid for it.
Exactly. Okay, folks, that's going to wrap up episode 14. Feel free to check out our website at angryadmins.com. Leave us advice, criticisms, hate posts, whatever you want on our forums. We have some nice forums out there. If we have any follow-up info on the show or any retractions or additions, we will follow that up in the forums with additional links or whatever out there. Until next week, I am Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
And you guys take it easy.
Stay angry.